welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who has been known to drive 70 miles on a snowmobile to just to get a decent mountain burger. It's Adam Hodgins.
I have been known to drive my snowmobile to get a good mountain burger.
70 miles?
Yeah, 70 miles. I can't tell you what a mountain burger is, but I can tell you I would drive 70 miles for one.
Yeah, that's the hardest intro I've ever had to do in 168 episodes, because I just wanted to laugh the entire way through it. Go for it.
I was just going to say, because even in this movie, they keep to, well, it's not that they make a burger called a mountain burger. They sure make a great mountain burger, which tells you that, you know, a mountain burger is a common thing, and they just do the best one of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So since this is – all right, so this is kind of a highfalutin ski club, you know, telling by the manager how much he cares. You know, he did go to Cornell, and he did get a degree in he got a degree in, let's see, well, a Cornell restaurant management restaurant management MFA from Cornell. But a mountain burger, after looking at that kitchen, I just feel like it's a really well done burger with a lot of mustard on it.
So I put down in my notes that I think a mountain burger is a burger not made from beef but made from mountain goat.
Oh, it's mountain goat burger.
Mountain goat burger is what I feel it is.
Because to call it, like, you can't be bringing in cattle from Florida for a mountain burger.
No.
Or goats, for that matter.
Right. And in I assume that it's winter 11 months of the year at this location, and they just can't handle cattle. Like, you can't keep cattle in that kind of weather, so they have to use mountain goats as their main source of protein.
Wow. What about bison?
Bison... I think are just like, they're too big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And bison and water buffalo, I think, are mainly bred for mozzarella cheese.
You're right.
We got deep cut there on cattle.
Yeah, we did. I should get some Cheyenne, some Herefords, you know?
Yeah.
My family, no, 100%. My family actually they have a farm out in Iowa. They have a ton of cattle. You should just start a cattle podcast about the best cattle of cinema, and we'd have to start with Top Secret.
Right, so my parents have a farm in Belleville.
Oh, really? So
yeah,
man, we're like twins, me and you.
You're like the American version of myself,
and you're like the Canadian version of me.
Exactly. So you're a little tougher, and I'm a little more polite.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more rock and roll. You're a little bit more smooth jazz.
Yeah, because Canada's known for its smooth jazz.
Well, Bryan Adams, right? Is Bryan Adams Canadian?
Do you consider Bryan Adams smooth jazz?
No, I guess he's more... Well, all right, so if you think about it, right, you have Alanis Morissette. She was pretty edgy.
She was.
All right, so
but
how
she
about
started
this?
She started like 80s pop, though.
How about this? I'm the Avril Lavigne, and you are the Alanis Morissette. Because she started off in pop.
Right.
I'm like the snarling guy, you know?
Right, but Avril Lavigne's Canadian too.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, I get it.
You know, I'm the Courtney Love, and you're the Alanis Morissette.
So I would say to go back to Bryan, I'd say you're Bruce Springsteen, and I'm Bryan Adams.
There we go.
Now we're talking.
Oh man, I like that.
Right? Have you seen his Broadway thing on Netflix? He did.
No, is it good?
Oh, it's entrancing because he plays like. Maybe in the hour and a half thing, he plays maybe 20 minutes of music. And the rest, he just gives these like long monologues about songs and stuff.
USA chants?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I thought you were talking about Bryan Adams at first.
No, not Bryan Adams. No, I don't think I could watch Bryan Adams do that for an hour and a half. But Springsteen is almost entrancing.
I need to watch this.
Fantastic.
But I've been watching this movie, and I watched the movie, and I listened to the Riff Trax version. But I just want to say, Avril Lavigne, her song Skater Boy, right?
Mm.
I want Alexander Payne, the director of Election, Nebraska, you know those kind of movies?
Yeah.
Sideways. I want him to direct a movie version of that.
Of Skater Boy.
Because if you think about it, right, that song is about this girl who likes his boy. He's a skater boy, but it's for her friends. She kind of likes him, right? But her friends are like, nah, nah. And she like ditches him. Then he becomes a huge rock star. she gets, supposedly in this story, she gets pregnant and someone leaves her, so she has a child. No judgment, I'm just saying, she has a child. Then the guy comes into town, right, and all of her friends who told her to dump him are going to his show, and they're going to be in the front row. And the girl who's singing this song knows about this girl somehow, so she's going to be there harassing this girl that dumped him, but now she's with him. So I just see a very Midwest version of like an Alexander Payne movie, kind of like paced like Election or paced like Sideways. But you just have this kind of sad character who just has bad luck. And that's a lot of these movies.
Right. And I think the only reason that's not happening right now is the opening line of the song is, he was a boy, she was a girl. Can I make it any more obvious? And I think in 2018, we're not allowed to say that. 2019. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I think that.
See, I think it's so simple that people might like it. Like, she just, this song, like, you know, there's songs like by Good Charlotte who say lifestyles of the rich and like girls don't like boys, girls like cars and money. That's not high art, but they're getting to the point.
100%.
We're not listening to metaphors here.
No, we're just, here it is, black and white on the page.
He's a boy, she's a girl. He is a person, she is a person. Yeah, it would get complicated.
It would.
Hey, that's another song by Avril Lavigne.
Oh.
So,
can all this be, can it be like a Four Rooms situation?
Just Avril Lavigne songs?
Four stories based on Avril Lavigne songs. Okay. And they're from a small town called Avril, Indiana.
Yes. And they're all they're all in a hotel, right? And so you have it's complicated. These two, and the guy acts differently when he's with his friends. Then you have the skater boy, and then
who are in the lobby of the hotel.
And then you have "I'm with You," or about a song about a woman who's "I'm with you." And then you have that one about "I don't like your girl. I'm gonna take your girl." Well, hey.
What's the name of that song? I don't need your boyfriend.
Isn't it boyfriend? Yeah, boyfriend. All right. So then you have these four songs. You have Alexander Payne doing one of them. You have Alfonso Cuarón. And then you'll have Ang Lee, right? And then just to kind of mix it up, right? Just a little mix. We'll throw in Kathryn Bigelow.
Okay.
And one of them.
I was gonna say Patty Jenkins, but Kathryn Bigelow works too.
I mean, she hasn't been working lately, so I want to see it.
I want to throw her a bone.
Yeah. And so these four vignettes, right? It'll be like the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. But
can we talk about how good that show is?
Best movie of 2018.
Like,
easily.
Did not expect that.
I watched that movie and I just said, that is 100% on my wavelength. It is like an Avril Lavigne song, but a movie.
I'm sorry. You are this deep cut Avril fan.
Yeah, well, so I was driving in my truck. I mean, I guess I was in my truck. That implies I'm driving. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, like, I miss the snarky and slightly anarchic musings of Avril Lavigne.
Right.
Yeah. And I just had that thought and then it fleeted. You know, then I thought about traffic because I live in Atlanta.
So the big conversation in my world was because like I work at a church and one of my main responsibilities is overseeing the church music that we play and sing. And so the big conversation like last month was like amongst people in my work peers would we play the new Avril Lavigne song in church?
Oh, there's a new one?
Well, because there's that one about keeping her head above the water.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, so it's all about her battle with fibromyalgia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it resembles a song you'd sing in church.
Got it.
And so that was the big thing, is like all the trendy churches were like, oh, we should sing the Avril song. And they're like, well, did it exactly fit the criteria? And so it's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to vaguely talk about God, but I'm not going to be offensive to people that love or do not love it. Right.
Got it.
So Avril was on my radar for last month there in conversations to do with my job.
So here we are, man. Avril,
we're talking about Icebreaker.
And I'm being earnest about this too. I'm not being a hater. Like, you know me, man. No. I'm not a guy that hates. I appreciate.
No, you are not.
I find the positives in things.
And I think that's what attracted me to you as a friend in the beginning, because again, we met at like the Wizard World Comic Con.
Yeah, Toronto.
Toronto?
Is that like Lowell, not Louisville?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly, Toronto. There's a song That's like, we said to look you up if I was in Toronto. It's like how we say it. I'll send you the link.
Yeah, please.
But in a world where sometimes people look at all the negative things happening at a Comic-Con because there's a lot to do, you're always a guy who's like, hey, this is, we're essentially getting together to hang out about make-believe. Why would that be like frustrating?
Yeah, exactly. I got to meet cool people. I got to travel. However, that weekend, I had to break into Canada Grows or whatever that Canada Sprouts.
Yep.
Canada has leaves. That was in the convention center next door to get an actress coffee because we didn't have any coffee in the green room. So I'm leading this entire Comic-Con, and I had to disappear for 30 minutes to break into another convention hall to buy coffee. And then
unbeknownst to me,
yeah,
and my sister was at that show because she does landscaping.
We should have worked something out.
Didn't even know.
And then I brought the coffee back, and they're like, oh, you didn't bring creamer? Because there wasn't any.
Right.
I don't want
to. So,
but I stayed positive, but I still stayed positive.
Right. At that same moment, Kamala, the wrestler, asked me to get, because I was part of your crew, asked me to get him some coffee. And so I went to go get him coffee, and then our side of the convention was out. And he did not stay positive.
What's going on in Toronto and coffee? What's the deal with Toronto and all the coffee?
It's a we figure we have a Tim's on every corner. There should be it's just flowing.
Oh, and yes, that's a good Jerry Seinfeld bit. What's the deal with the coffee in Canada?
They've got lots of Tim's, but nothing to drink.
Where's the second cup? I can't find one.
Right. We can go on. So I do need to apologize to you for making you watch this Icebreaker movie.
I love it.
Well, I just... The last subject matter that I chose for our little podcast here was Steel Dawn. And so I do want to let you know, like, I do watch successful movies.
Yeah.
Not everything I watch is this, like, underground, you know, B on a good day cinema. But you had mentioned you wanted to do a whole thing about snowmobiles. And I was like, well, the most snowmobile-based movie I know is Icebreaker. With Sean Astin and Bruce Campbell. Well, so that got us here.
That's what sold it on me, though. When you said Bruce Campbell was a Hans Gruber-esque bad guy, I was like, right? I'm renting it. But
100%.
I had a very hard time finding it. And I ended up getting the Riff Tracks version of it.
Okay. That's hilarious. I have it on DVD.
What? How did you find it? First and foremost, how did you find out about this movie?
Okay, so here's...
And do you like Mango?
Here it comes. I like Mango. Working with in the church, my job is the youth program and the music program. And so what I used to do is we'd have all once a month, we have like a guy's movie night, and all like teenagers would come over and we'd, you know, just do pizza and movies and stuff. So what I started doing is we'd go to this little place called Steve's TV down the road from my house, and they had like a bargain bin. But it was an independent guy, so it was all kinds of stuff in there. And so we would blindfold the kid, spin him in a circle, and then he'd put his hand in and grab a movie. And that was the movie for the night, regardless of what it was.
Fate.
Icebreaker was one of those movies.
I mean, so what was your first, like, what did you think about it when you were watching this? And what year was this?
Okay, so it happened 2004.
Okay.
When I saw it.
And this came out in 2000.
2000, but I'm pretty sure it was filmed in 96.
It had to have been.
Because the newest car in the show was a 1996 Mercury Sable, and I know for a fact those snowmobiles are 1995 Polaris Indy Sport 440s.
Ooh, that's a good call right there.
Yeah, so the newest thing in there is from 96, and it did not look like it was made in 2000. So it's definitely sat in a shelf for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah, because they probably got the principal actors on set, right? And then they probably had to do a ton of reshoots. So they probably were like, we got Bruce and Sean here. Let's just shoot all our scenes with them, and then we'll do everything else.
Right.
And they, since this is out of Edgewood Studios, who actually they do have kind of a, they have a cult following because of this Riff Tracks covering their movies, and the director's David Giancola, who also did Time Chasers. And so this is what in Vermont. And so it sounds like he just finds a tax loophole and gets the entire city together and they make a bad movie.
100%. Because my favorite thing about this movie, now keeping in mind it has Bruce Campbell in it, my favorite thing about this movie was the extras in the background.
Yeah.
Who just seemed to be like so happy to be in a movie. Like there's a person with a nuclear bomb who's going to blow up the mountain, and nobody seems that, if you just watch the background, nobody seems that worried about it.
Everybody who is an extra seems happy, and all the principals seem distraught.
Well, I want to say this. I feel like every principal actor thought they were filming a different movie.
Yeah.
So you have Bruce Campbell, who always brings his A game.
Consummate professional.
And again, another thing that ages this movie is this does not look like the Bruce Campbell from Spider-Man. This looks like a much younger Bruce Campbell.
Can I pitch you a theory about Bruce Campbell in this?
Only if I can counter-pitch you my theory with him.
Okay, you go first.
I think that Bruce Campbell showed up for this movie because he did not get picked to play Lex Luthor in the Tim Burton Superman Nicolas Cage movie.
Whoa.
I think he went to the audition, shaved his head, got a black coat and black pants. He's like, I'm going to play Lex Luthor. He went and he read for it. And Tim Burton said, Joel Schumacher said, you're not what we're looking for, Bruce. I'm going to have a hard pass. And then he's like, okay. And then he saw auditions for this next door one in, and they said, you're perfect for this Hans Gruber role. Because the whole time I was like, imagine this Bruce Campbell as Lex Luthor in a Nicolas Cage Superman movie.
Oh, my gosh. And you know he lives out in Oregon. So when they're like, hey, come out to a ski slope for, he's probably there for 2 weeks, 1 week.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey,
ski.
So you can come out and ski for a week. We'll shoot all your scenes and then you're out. So he's like, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe he's bitter from losing that role. And then he figured I'd come out there and shoot the movie.
Right.
But if you watch this movie, I'm saying he's a consummate professional. And I'm not saying this is a mark on his profession, because I've worked with him at cons and Comic Cons, and he expects everything to be perfect. Like, and it actually raises the game of everybody else because they expect that. Actually, he retweeted one of my articles this year and he got 4,000 favorites on it. The something about the best horror franchises on Rotten Tomatoes. Look up Mark Hoffmeyer, Rotten Tomatoes. You can read the article. It's awesome.
What a beauty.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell. 4,000 favorites on my article. I was like, oh my gosh. But so on this film, though, he went over there with high hopes. You know, this guy, David Giancola, is talking a big game. He had directed Time Chasers. It's a kitschy cult classic. You know, people like it. He shows up.
It gives him some talk about.
Yeah. We're going to make this movie. It's like Die Hard on a mountain with the kid from Rudy. And he's like, well, whatever. You know, I've been in worse. So he shows up. And since he's such a professional, but through this movie, I just watched the collapse of Bruce Campbell. Because he is standing by a bar the entire time. And he keeps taking shots. And at the end, when he's supposed to be drunk, his eyes are really bloodshot. And I'm not putting this out there. I think he just became so dismayed with the shooting that both he and Stacy Keach, the stuff where he was drinking in that gimlet or goblet, he was really drinking. I think they both were just on set questioning their life and just hammering shots of whiskey with their dialogue. Because a lot of their shots are just one shots. And a lot of their dialogue is them just walking around. So
I also feel that everything Bruce Campbell, or every second line Bruce Campbell said, I think he was just ad-libbing.
Yeah, I do too. Because
it was too good. It was so much better than the rest of the writing in the movie.
Yeah, you're right. And I think Stacy Keach just like read every line from the script, because he's like, I'm not even going to bother to improv on this thing.
So this is what I'm saying. Like, Bruce Campbell started off thinking like, hey, I've been in worse, but I'm going to treat this like I do everything. Like, I'm going to treat it like it's going to win me the Oscar. And then Sean Astin, he's like, I'm going to be the next action star. So he was really actioning it up.
Yeah.
And then you had Cliff, the manager.
Oh, my gosh.
Who,
angriest man.
I don't know what he was trying to do there. I'll say he made choices and stuck with them. But it was almost like he was in like a teenage comedy movie.
Yeah.
I didn't understand like what his motivation was. And then there was like the park ranger who was – I think this was his like.
He was a local.
I think he wanted to be the next Ernest.
Oh. Like,
and he's like, I don't have money to do my own like reel, so I'll just be Ernest in this movie. Because there was times where it was like a very serious scene, and he'd do like straight up slapstick comedy.
He's almost the hero of this movie too, and he gets the longest chase.
There's a lot of wrong. moments here for who is the hero. Like, how in the world does Stacy Keach get to be the hero of this movie who kills Bruce Campbell?
Yeah, all right. Can I ask you? All right, okay. So let's break down the plot of this movie real quick. So it's about Bruce Campbell. All right, so I just want to. So a plane, you start up this movie off with a plane, and there's a guy in there eating crackers and mini mangoes, and he's being an absolute.
They are not crackers, they are Fig Newtons.
Fig Newtons. He's making a mess.
And I call that guy Budget Jack Earl Haley.
Budget Jack, yeah. I forget his name. But so they're flying, but they can't go too high, but they have weapon-grade plutonium in there. Eventually, the guy gets so sick of Mango Man or Budget Jack Earl Haley that the guy's like, screw it, I'm crashing the plane.
I'm crashing the plane.
Because I am so tired of you, and you won't let me fly high, so I'm going to crash the plane. They crash the plane, and which leaves weapons-grade plutonium on a ski slope, which is unstable. So then Bruce Campbell and his Canadian, right? He gets his guys from Canada, not Canadian.
Exactly. Not love that line.
Not from Canada. Not from Canada. And they go to the ski slopes to find the C4, or no, find the weapons-grade plutonium and stabilize it so they can leave the area with it.
Right.
Yes. But during,
you're forgetting about the hard cut from the airplane to a chopper above Vegas.
With Bruce Campbell and Budget Jackie Earl Haley.
Hanging from it. He's interrogating him.
How did he get there so fast?
I have no idea, but I think that had to be a pickup reshoot to explain where that character went.
Because that character didn't even have to come back.
No, but they're like, we gotta tie up these loose ends.
And he had a bump on his head.
People are going to ask questions.
And so Bruce kicks him off, and they show up to whatever mountain the name of the mountain is. I have it here somewhere.
Kilgore.
Yeah.
Killington.
Killington Mount Mountain. Killington. Mount Killington. So they show up there, but what they don't know, Adam, is that our man Matt, the local ne'er-do-well kind of slacker, is on the case.
So can we talk about their date?
Where's with him?
Because they're introduced on the least romantic date I've ever seen on film.
Yeah.
Like, if you showed me that scene, you're like, this is the scene of a bad date before he meets the girl he actually likes, I'd be like, oh, then this is a great shot. But it's not. This is the, like, love. Never will these two be more in love than they are right now, which is sad for them both. But very progressive. She pays the bill.
Yep.
Establishing that she has to. Right? But he pulls out a little chart and keeps track of the money as if he's going to pay her back one day.
Even though they're going to be married.
So I don't know how it works in your marriage, Mark, but I've never paid for a meal out and then said to my wife, like, did you keep track of that? Because, like, this is even, so you have to owe me back at some point in time.
You got to buy our next dinner.
Yeah, like, the next one's on you. So that happens. There's literally no chemistry with them. Mm-mm. They talk a little bit about how he doesn't like my dad. And then she keeps, like, enticing him to come back with her. And he's like, well, no, I better not. Okay. He finally agrees, and they take separate cars.
And his car won't start.
And his car won't start because he has no money.
He's not a winner.
No.
She can do, but Stacy Keach has a justified, you know, in a lot of these movies where the dad just kind of hates the guy and he doesn't know him, but he only hates him because, you know, he just loves his daughter and he's jealous. Stacy Keach hates this guy because he's horrible.
He is, but at the same time, Stacy Keach should say, like, well, I have talked to my daughter. So, like, I know her and her cardboard, like, emotions. Maybe this is the best she's going to do is this ski bump.
And that's what he calls him, Ski Bum Matt. That's his nickname throughout the movie.
Yes. Yes, it is. Wow. And I think that was their cowboy. Like, because this keeps being referred to, like, as Die Hard in Winter. And so Bruce Campbell overhears that there's, you know, Ski Bum Matt. And I think that's, they're like, well, hello, cowboy. Like, I think that's what's going on there.
Yeah, you're right. Because he's this kind of ski bum.
Yeah.
And he does let her know, though, your kind of people don't marry my kind of people.
Yeah, he did say that, didn't he?
Yeah. And can I tell you something? Stacy Keach had an amazing tiny scarf in this movie.
He had an amazing tiny scarf in this movie.
When he's in the car, I was looking at his little scarf. Because it's cold where they're shooting. I got to give them credit for that.
Yep.
You know, I watch a lot of Christmas movies. I probably did 25 of them this year with my wife and other people, you know, getting them on in the background. Princess Switch is the best. Vanessa Hudgens on Netflix. She crushes it. Crazy likable.
Okay.
A lot of these movies, you have fake snow. You have blankets. You have foam. It was the best thing about this movie is it was cold.
It was very cold.
And they gave him a tiny scarf.
But they also gave him a mountain burger.
Yeah, they did. No, wait. Did he get him? He did. Did he order the mountain burger?
I think. No, that was a change of subject. He's like, are you really going to marry this Joker? And her response is, Dad, they make a great mountain burger here.
And I don't even think he ordered the mountain burger.
I don't think they got. He ordered a scotch, but I don't think he got a mountain burger yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, they were there for hours, too, before they were even taken over by terrorists.
Right.
So this makes your theory that they might be killing the goat and then bringing the meat, too. That's how fresh the mountain burger is.
Right. No, it's you don't go there for the skiing. You go there for the mountain burger.
Yeah.
And you stay for the skiing.
I mean, people from L.A. are flying out here. You know, people from Oregon, people from Phoenix. You know, I think there are some Australians there for the mountain burger.
Yeah. No. Here's the thing. If it turns out this was a real ski lodge that actually has a mountain burger, I might take my next vacation there.
Yeah. I mean,
just so I could call you and say, Mark, guess what I'm eating right now?
I want to know it, too. Even if you didn't tell me you were in the mountains and you sent me that message, I would go mountain burger.
Exactly.
I would know. You know that.
So, So Bruce Campbell, he's now going to get this plutonium.
Yeah. With Franz.
With his Canadian. With Franz, who I think is the throwback to Joshua from Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, there's the kind of the albino henchman.
He's the blonde henchman.
Yeah. And so, but everybody else they have is like a buffoon.
Total. Josh.
Josh.
I like Josh because he's just so out of place in this movie.
Well, they all are, because I think they all are making, again, I think every actor is making a different movie.
I think Josh was a friend, though. I'm not hating on him, because if I got put in a movie, I would not. If I got put next to Bruce Campbell in a movie, I would not hold my own. So I think Josh did a fine job, but I think he was woefully miscast.
But I think if you were filming, say, Rain of Fire 2 starring Bruce Campbell.
Oh, my gosh.
And you were like, hey, Hodgins, I need you to come and play a role in it. And I was like, okay. He's like, it's not a big role, but you're going to have two scenes with Mr. Campbell. I would take my one opportunity to walk up and say, excuse me, Mr. Campbell, this upcoming scene, just what are your thoughts on it? Because I want to be the best foil to you as I can. I want to frame you the best way that I, out of courtesy for you and your utmost professionalism, I want to be the best reactive component to this as I can.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of those conversations happened.
No. I think Bruce Campbell. All right, so I found, you know me, man. You know I like to do a lot of.
I tried to do a lot of research. Digging on this. I could not find much.
I found one thing, and I can't say that it's true, because this came from someone whose friend, cousin, did wardrobe department on this movie. And bear in mind, I listened to the riff tracks, I watched the movie, I did everything I could to find research on this film, and there's nothing. Wikipedia,
nothing.
Bruce Campbell has a tiny blurb on his website. I looked up everything I could find, nothing. But here's what I did find. So according to this person, according to her, Sean Astin is a very friendly and warm, but that Bruce Campbell was a guy's guy who acted like an asshole to the production crew. A man named Giancola is directing. Other facts, according to the wardrobe description that goes along with his headshot, Bruce Campbell is 190 pounds and wears a size 11 shoe. Here's another fact. He lives in Oregon, but this info is kind of sensitive, so you might not want to... Oh, so you might want to leave this out. Oh, crap. Like I said, he has a big ego. But I guess when you've got legions of adoring geek cult fans, who wouldn't have a big ego? That's the one behind-the-scenes thing I found about this movie.
Incredible.
I don't think Bruce Campbell, though, was... I think he just got the set, figured out what was going on, and just said, oh, no... And I don't think a lot of the production crew or maybe that experience, I don't think he cut it easy on people, but he expected professionalism, but they weren't quite there yet. So I think it just led him to being on set, getting it done, having fun with the dialogue and having scotch during takes.
Exactly. And again, he's what made this watchable.
Yes.
You know, you'd love to say that Rudy made it watchable, but he didn't. He was more of a prop in this.
And all right, so we're jumping ahead, guys. He gets into a fight with Josh. They get separated, and he's like, I'm going to go save my girlfriend and Stacy Keach. He doesn't even call her. Stacy's Keach name in this movie is Stacy Keach.
Right. Meg's dad.
Meg's dad, a.k.a. I have a note in here that says Bruce Campbell kind of tries. And I also wrote most B-roll I've ever seen. And then I wrote poor Bruce.
Yes.
Like, my notes are very – I need a drink. I feel like he meant it.
So I have a note I have here. And tell me if you agree with this, but none of the shots – in this movie give any sense of location or scope.
None. He could be, so when he's out looking at the plutonium, that could be 30 feet away from where the diner is.
Right. But even the last standoff where Bruce is talking to Samwise Gamgee, I don't know if they're a mile apart or 4 inches apart.
No, I have no idea.
Because they're never in the frame together.
All one shots. I'm telling you, Bruce is like, just film everything I have right here. And like, well, can we move around? No, we're doing everything by the bar. You lied to me. This is a shit show, a crap show, crap shoot. And so he's like, I'm going to sit right here and I am going to say this dialogue. You know what I mean?
And then I'll be in my trailer.
Yeah. I'm doing one shots only. Maybe yeah. One with Josh towards the end when Josh ducks out.
And he says, get out of here. Everybody get out of here.
I think
they're outside. They're on a mountain.
I think he hated all of them, so he's like, get out of here.
Yeah, I don't think that was the line in the movie. I think he was just angry at the crew and they filmed it.
I have one line in here that's all caps and I wrote, I think that was a real whiskey. And then I don't know why in my notes I wrote, I'm serious.
Like you're convincing yourself.
Yeah, I kind of just want to release these notes. Skiba and Matt. I want to jump ahead. So he, Sean Astin's like, I'm going to save the day. But I'm telling you what, man, we're making fun of this movie, but it has personality. It really does. This is not a movie that, like, so I've watched movies where I feel nothing, right? And I just think they're made poor. I think this movie was made with love. I think people worked really hard on it. I think they thought they had a coup bringing in Bruce Campbell and Sean Astin. The car chase that they have, they really do wreck some cars, and they put some thought into that. The jet ski chase, that action scene is coherent, and you can...
You mean the snowmobile chase,
not
the
jet ski chase. Yeah, oh, goodness. The snowmobile chase, it's coherent. So I think these people really... I think locals worked on this. I think they thought it was a big deal. So I'm not, like, hating on this movie.
And again, I think this is the best version of this movie that we can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because there's locals working on it, and that's where I keep going back to it. I sort of sound like a broken record, but I think people thought they were making a different kind of movie. Because, like, in the snowmobile chase, which is, like, exciting and it's dramatic and there's a snowboard involved and it's very James Bondy in its genesis. But there's a scene where Ranger's throwing things at Canadian girl. And it's almost like a scene from Airplane.
He throws Pez at her?
He throws Pez, and he throws, like, a very important black box at her, and, like, then finally something hits her in the head. Like, it's shot and feel like it's edited like it's a slapstick, Leslie Nielsen bit. Right? But
Pez is – do you think Ant-Man and the Wasp stole that Pez thing this year from
– 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
But I'm telling you, that snowmobile chase – they filmed it.
No, that's what got this going into our conversation.
Yep.
Because I said this is the best snowmobile movie out there.
They film snowmobiles actually going in lines. And I think to a certain extent, they showcase why snowmobile action scenes are better than jet ski action scenes because the lady blows up. Canadian woman blows up.
It does.
She explodes.
Yeah, she no longer exists.
And he does not care. The guy who kills her.
Well, no. And you know why he doesn't care?
Why?
Because he has a boy at home who he has broken so many promises to.
He does say that too, doesn't he?
In the middle of this, Sean Astin's like, I'm going to go save the day. And Park Ranger says, not me. I've got a single boy at home with no mom. And he's had a life full of broken promises. And Sean Astin says, it's okay. You've done enough. And at which point, he had done nothing.
Yeah.
But just
he
like,
saves the day, though. He takes a snowmobile.
That, but that moment is the moment from The Room where it's like, well, I have cancer.
Yep.
And it's never mentioned again. Like, we don't ever meet this son. He never hugs him at the end. What he does at the end is he gives a news reporter a headlock and puts her to sleep.
Yeah.
Barbara Beefcake style.
He's very...
on the news.
He's overly confident in those interviews, and I don't like it.
I don't like his interviews, and I don't like Cliff's interviews.
Yeah, Cliff was saying, like, if terrorists comes, we're going to blow people up.
And he's like, we are going to ensure you have the best time. He's holding an M16.
So there's a time when Sean Astin walks in the beginning of this movie, and Cliff looks like he's going to fist fight him.
Yeah.
I mean, Cliff, the manager, is so angry at Sean Astin for being rakish. Who, actually, I think only Rufus Sewell can be called rakish, by the way. And he's amazing in Marvelous Miss Maisel Season 2. He's going to win an Emmy and a Golden Globe for, like, a special appearance on the show. But, so, little rakish Sean Astin comes in, and he wants to fist fight him. Like, managers can't do that.
No, I want to say this. I think that Cliff is, at best, assistant manager material.
Yeah, at best. He's not a leader.
But in the moment, so his resort is being taken over by terrorists with a nuclear weapon. That's happening.
Yeah.
Sean Astin calls him on the phone, and he's like, I'm on the mountain. I'm trying to save the day. Who's in charge there? And he starts yelling at Sean Astin. He's like, they're all dead because they're all chickens. And he's just like, he's so angry and nonsensical. I was like, what? This is bananas. And then somebody calls him. I forget who it was, but somebody, I have written down here, someone calls him, that guy's a real Humpty Dumpty. Like, that's a line from the movie, is that guy's a real Humpty Dumpty. And I was like, that is crazy. And then he goes out, and you could tell he super loves Tilly. But he goes out, and he gets a gun, and he's like, that's it, I'm kicking it. And she says, what are you kicking, Clay? And he says, with all the seriousness in the world, he says, ass Tilly, ass. Like, he's been waiting for this moment all his life.
And then he kills a guy, and he goes, take that, you terrorist bastard. And then he goes, I want to kill more of those scumbags. He goes
on a murderous
rampage. He sees the red mist.
Yeah, 100%. He sees whatever Sandra Bullock is trying not to see with her blindfold.
He has two of these lines. He has two of these lines that I love. We're going to kick it. We're going to kick ass. And then he goes, you're like those fluffy things that jump off the cliff and follow each other.
Oh, yes. The lemmings line.
Yeah, the lemmings. And then they're like, what? Like, those lines were written by somebody. Like, the guy who wrote this, the Giancola, the director, wrote those lines. 100%. Those are his, highlights.
He wrote this movie, right? Like, he wrote and directed this?
But, like, you know, so you have scenes, right, where Bruce Campbell, there's a line of dialogue that I mean in here. I love when Bruce Campbell goes, the real monsters are the normal people wearing fine suits and giving you a compliment. That's a Bruce Campbell on the spot line, right?
He also has a great, monologue at the end.
Yeah.
Where he talks about, like, freedom, and he just, like, just really goes out there. And I think that's where the whiskey was kicking in.
Oh, because his eyes are bloodshot during some of these scenes. And maybe it's cold. Maybe he had allergies. Maybe it's really dry. And I don't know. Do your eyes get red when it's super dry out?
A little bit.
Yeah, maybe it was Visine, because, you know, you get dryness there. So, you know, it could be extenuating circumstances, or it could be whiskey. So I think they just let him monologue on top of that house. He was monologuing to Sean Astin. Wait, so he had caught Matt, the ski bum, and then he told him about the people who wear fine suits are the ones you got to look out for, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then the later one comes when he's telling everyone to leave him, correct?
Right. But, he also went on, like, mad rants when things weren't going his way. But if I asked you, Mark, tell me his plan in a perfect situation, could you do it?
Well, he just didn't want to deal with any more police machismo.
But he was like, call 911. Way beyond this being about money.
All he had to do, they just had to find that case, right? And then if Ski Bum Matt and the park ranger comes up to him, hey, we're agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we're here on highly classified things, and they're working with the FBI already, right? Because, you know, that was your fault in Santiago, well, I guess Chile.
That to me was the Cleveland moment in Escape from New York.
Yeah, exactly. So they threw that in. So they have all they had to do was go stabilize that weapons grade plutonium. He didn't need to take over anything. And they didn't need to walk around the entire ski lodge because they knew where it was.
Right.
So this movie just happened because Bruce Campbell didn't want to leave the bar.
No, a lot of things came down to, like, Bruce is calling the shots here. Yeah. And again, Sean Astin had done Rudy and Goonies, but he wasn't. I'm going to say he had about 4 years doing Lord of the Rings movies where he was like, oh, this is a guy. But then he was like the comic relief on 51st Dates.
Yeah, and Click.
And Click. So don't think he's like the powerhouse that maybe his name lends itself to. So he's not calling the shots here.
No, and I think he took this role because – all right, so Mark Wahlberg got The Happening, and he took it because he said, when am I ever going to be able to play a science teacher, right? And I love The Happening. Yep. I think that movie – I think his plan was great. You should really listen to the podcast, everybody. It's a good podcast about it. But he's like, I'll never – so this one, they're like, hey, you could be an action star. And I bet Sean Astin was like, hell yeah. I get to ride around on snowmobiles, and I get to have women pay for my burgers, my mountain burgers.
Mountain burgers.
I get to hang out with, you know, Stacy Keach is going to be here? Great. You know, Bruce Campbell? Wow, this is awesome. Do I get my own snowmobile? Sure. Can I ski half the day? Yeah. Like, I'd take that role.
Do you think he got paid in snowmobiles? Do you think it was like, we'll give you $10,000 and a snowmobile when we're done?
I mean, so obviously he lives in Washington, right? Because that's where the Goonies takes place.
Right.
So, you know, they're L.A. And you know those semis that take all the cars? You see like 8 cars packed up on a thing?
Yep.
They had one of those with like 20 snowmobiles.
Right.
And maybe a jet ski.
Maybe just a jet ski.
Because, you know, it's on the coast. And and so they delivered all those to him just for pay. It's like Price is Right, right? Or no, it's Wheel of Fortune. No, Price is Right.
Wheel of Fortune. Yeah, Price is Right. The showdown.
Win this snowmobile. Like, that's what it was. They just brought them all to him. That was the payment. And they were all used.
Yeah, because they're all, like, film used.
Yeah. Not new.
Yeah, because, again, the car was from 96. The newest car is from 96. But those snowmobiles were all 95s.
Yeah.
And snowmobiles are much cheaper to buy than cars. So I guarantee they bought used snowmobiles for this movie.
Oh, except for the ones that they use in this movie, because they look pretty slick, didn't they? Didn't they use some pretty nice snowmobiles on screen?
They were nice snowmobiles on screen, but they weren't like they were 440s, which is a pretty big deal, maybe then. But again, like at that point in time, I think like the 680 was like the top of the line. Like they look good because Polaris always make things look good. And especially in like the late mid 90s, they were kind of really hitting their stride for being what they were. I don't think they were super impressive at the time. Like they weren't going to be the best in the showroom. I think they're exactly what a ski hill would have on site.
Well,
a couple years old mid range machines.
I bet you one of their friends or someone at the ski lodge loaned those out.
They were probably the ski lodge's machines.
Yeah. What do you think? That makes sense, right?
That makes sense to me.
Oh, man. Well, listen, let's sit on that for a little bit because that's big news. So what we'll do is we'll sit on that for a little bit, and when we come back, I want to talk about a scene that's going to blow both of our minds. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And normally we do a funny interlude, but I want to get into it right now. I want to get into the meat and mountain burger of this movie.
Yes, yeah, serve me up a mountain burger.
All right. Which I think it's a goat meat with lots of mustard. I don't know why mustard. Don't ask me why. But
as you said that, you know what I think it actually is?
What?
What I think it would realistically be? Just a hamburger with goat cheese, mountain goat cheese.
Oh yeah, and for some reason, lots of mustard.
Oh yeah, no, there's Dijon, honey, and plain yellow all on there.
Burnt to a crisp.
Yeah.
Just fried.
When they toast the bun, but don't do a good job about it. But you're in a ski lodge, so what do?
You're not driving anywhere else, and parking's probably a pain.
There's no McDonald's down the corner.
Yeah. So if that's the best thing they have there, you don't want to eat anything else.
No.
All right. So, speaking of eating, I'm really tying this in here. Now, there's a scene in this movie where Sean Astin goes to save the day, and he goes inside a kitchen.
I know the scene you're talking about.
He steps inside this is his chance to save the day.
Be the hero.
To be the day. He walks inside a kitchen, and you think, hey, this is going to be like a sudden death. Because sudden death happened before this movie, the kitchen fight. Under Siege, The Bodyguard. Yep. There have been many fantastic kitchen fights before this movie happened, right? But he goes into the kitchen.
Remember the kitchen fight from the Bruce Lee movie?
Which one?
With dragging the Bruce Lee story with Jason Scott Lee?
No, I never watched that. There's a kitchen fight in that one?
A fantastic kitchen fight in that one.
And speaking of kitchen fights, I didn't mean this on purpose, but we do have a podcast about kitchen fights. And I did write an article about kitchen fights as well.
Of course you did.
It's pretty good. So there's a kitchen fight in Ant-Man and the Wasp, by the way, which is pretty good. So that's my favorite superhero movie of 2018, just to let you know. So Sean Astin goes into this kitchen, and you think, hey, he's going to like save the day. There's going to be some fist fights. He just stops and starts eating a burger, right? He takes a bunch of bites on a burger. And I'm like, okay, he wanted a
ravenous homeless person. Yeah,
so I was like, you know what? He probably just wants a couple bites of food. But then he starts going for potatoes.
He just starts ramming everything. Like, it's not like he's been – like, remember a cliffhanger with Stallone?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In that movie, it's like a couple days he's up with a T-shirt on in the mountains and no food. So if he was there, you could see him kind of – this guy has maybe been late for lunch.
Yeah, he went out that morning, and it's still light out. And when all the reporters are there, it's still light outside. And it probably gets dark early there, right? Just because of the season.
It's winter time.
Yeah. So, I mean, he gets out there at 10 a.m., right? So he's probably in this kitchen at like...
By 11:30.
So, wait, he wants a second breakfast. So he... He's in this kitchen, and he just starts ramming food into his mouth. And so, you know, some of these movies where, like, let's say you're on the run and you grab a couple fries, right? Like, I get that.
Yeah.
Like, just because you need, some carbs. But he, like,
let's
you
say
said,
you're fighting some guys in a diner, and someone walks by with a bucket of popcorn. You eat some popcorn, and then you keep fighting.
That's it. You know, you'll be chewing and fighting. He stops.
Yeah.
And he is just, like you said, I'm going back on this, but he is ravenous. He bites into this thing, and I'm wondering who's... See, the thing is, they hadn't been serving food for a while because the terrorists had been there. So that food must have been sitting there for a while. He dives into it.
It's not eight.
Then he – I just don't get it. I don't get it, Adam. Why does he start going for other food around the kitchen? Like, it's been an hour and a half.
Yeah. He reminded me of the pig from the new Peter Rabbit movie. It just is like, oh, I'll have a bite, rah, 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 and eats it all. He's like a hungry, hungry hippo. He cannot stop.
I think that movie's worth podcasting about, by the way, Peter Rabbit.
That's my favorite movie of 2018.
I mean, all right, let's just do a podcast about it. What do you think eventually?
And absolutely.
All right. Yeah, we got to. All right, so we'll do that. I just want to keep talking about rib breaking, but all right, we'll save that for the pod because it's great rib breaking. All right, so.
Absolutely.
All right, we're talking about Peter Rabbit, not in this movie. But so he's eating and he's grabbing everything he can find. People run in, they start shooting at him. But the best scene in this movie, they had no money for stunt doubles in this film.
None.
There's this scene, all right, Because Sean, I'm not saying this would be bad, but Sean Astin's probably what, 5'3", 5'4", 5'5"?
He's not a big dude.
Yeah. So he's in a fight with this henchman, and this henchman picks him off the ground by his ski jacket and slams him in the kitchen. And on Sean Astin's face is just fear. I don't think he was acting in that moment. I think that large man who is not a stuntman, who is probably the friend of the director and got that role because he was the biggest guy to do it. And this is random. Yeah. I was working on The Odd Life of Timothy Green, and it was supposed to be like a take your kids to school day, and they threw me in there because I was like the biggest guy, and they had me like lifting up a kid in the background for like an hour. So that, you know, it's probably the same thing, but I wasn't terrifying the child.
Why you're not in Icebreaker.
Yeah. So he picks up, I'm telling you, you guys, I don't know how you can rent this movie. The cheapest way to do it's Riff Tracks, $1.99. You have to do it. But Sean asked me. Yeah.
It's free on Tubi, the Riff Tracks version.
Really? Oh, so I paid for it. Oh, dang it. All right. Well, I'm going to watch it again because this movie, I'm going to write a review for Icebreaker and just show it to the world. People have to watch this. And also, I think the Riff Tracks thing is funny. All right. So when he gets picked up and slammed, he gets slammed on plates, like real plates.
Yeah.
And the look on his face is just fear. Like he was afraid. I felt so bad for him because that guy picked him up and slammed him. Did you happen to catch that moment?
I in watching that whole process take place of him ravenously eating. Like I think Peter Jackson saw this movie and he's like, "That's how a hobbit eats. That is how a hobbit eats." And so he hits a switch that tells you when an order's up outside, which is something I've never seen before. And then Carl, the henchman, sees that and he's like, "Oh, there must be someone to shoot in the kitchen." Comes in the kitchen, and then this fight happens, and it's so surreal because it's not elegant. And good fight scenes are elegant and almost a dance.
Yep.
This is not that.
He picked Sean Astin up and slammed. So you know what though? This is what a fight would actually look like in real life. Because I think that's what this extra thought they were doing. And I think Sean Astin almost. I'm not saying this, but I think he might have wanted to quit the movie after this scene.
So I want to say, because of this kitchen fight, it's the reason there isn't an end fight between him and Bruce Campbell.
Whoa! I'm with you 100%.
He's like, "I'm not fighting another guy, another big guy."
I almost got killed.
Yeah, man. I broke two of my ribs over there.
He got slammed on plates.
Yeah. Like real, not paper plates, but real dishes.
I want you to watch this again. I don't know what we can do, but I just want you, maybe like before we end this pod, we'll just take a quick break. And then if you can scope, I don't know, but Tubi does commercials, right? So you can't blast through it, can you?
I'll bring it up right here. I got my computer here as we're talking.
All right. So I just want you to see his face, and we can always come back to it and maybe get your reaction later. I mean, we could do like a 5-minute thing at the end of this pod just to kind of hear your reaction to it. How's that sound?
That sounds great. I've almost got it up here on my iPad.
Okay, sweet. So I just love this scene, man. I know we're really going off on it. But this is also random too. So in Goonies, they had to like do booby traps and deal with like criminals to get to a treasure, right? And then you had Encino Man where they dug up, they found an old guy from the ground, right? And then Rudy, he had to have a lot of heart and keep going forward. That's like training for Samwise right there. Those three movies 100%. Are Samwise. And then this movie with his eating. So every movie, and then Toy Soldiers. So every movie that he did,
He was in Toy Soldiers.
Every movie he did led him to Lord of the Rings. And I bet you on set of Lord of the Rings, he's like, "I was on this movie." So he's dealing with the best in the business during the fight scene. So on Fellowship of the Ring, when they're fighting in that troll cave, right? When the troll comes in and the goblins are rushing him, everything is choreographed beautifully. Peter Jackson is a maestro. At lunch that day, he's sitting, he's like, "Hey, Viggo. Hey, Legolas. I can't think of your name right now. I'm on this movie Icebreaker, and this guy,
Orlando Bloom,
hey, this guy slams me through 57 plates, and I break 3 ribs, and I couldn't have a fight scene with Bruce Campbell." And he's joking around about it.
And that's why I took the job, was to have a fight scene with Bruce Campbell, but I'm not. Not now. Not for that.
And Bruce might have been too drunk.
Oh, yeah. They were clearly miles apart when they were filming that last interaction.
Yeah. I do want to say, though, Astin's super cool, though. So I think he was perfect. Because I don't know if you've ever met him on the Comic-Con scene. He was always super relaxed. Awesome dude.
I have met him. Here's what I'm thinking.
I don't want to sound like we're hating on him, because every time I've worked with him, he's been a consummate professional. So I don't want to sound like I'm being... But he got slammed on plates in this movie.
Okay, so I'm at 56 minutes and 10 seconds is the marker.
And so there's
a guy shooting at Sean Astin. And I'll say this as well. The guns in this movie are bananas.
There's a gun barrel that is at least an inch wide. You know, like the diameter is.
But if you watch, Mark, it's only when they're shooting them. They'll have the same guy will hold a gun with a small regular barrel. It'll cut back to him. It'll have a huge barrel on it, and then the barrel flash comes out of it.
Oh, so that's why they put the big thing on there to get the flash.
Yeah. So I'm gonna push play right now.
Okay.
And I'm gonna watch this fight. So he's running.
Give us a play by play.
And okay, so now this guy grabs him. He's lifting him up. He's smashing him down. And he throws him against the fridge. The guy with glasses comes in, so there's no. He hits him with a pot, and now he's shoving him under the. There's the fear. Look right there. He is legit. He hits him with a bottle. He wants to. He's trying to get out of there for real.
Didn't he get slammed? He got slammed, right?
He got slammed so hard.
Yes.
And then he runs out into a huge machine gun in Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. And then he gets
also. I forgot until I saw it right now. That Bruce Campbell and his team have the largest earpieces I've ever seen. But they're just in the restaurant before everybody knows.
Yep.
All they know is that there's no phones or anything working, but here's six guys that have massive ear sets on in 1996.
And walkie-talkies don't work either.
Yeah, love that.
The other people
don't work either.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't get it, but I love it. That's what makes this movie have so much personality. That's why
it
I love,
is so endearing.
That's why I love Bruce Campbell movies, and that's why I watch all of them, because they just have – I've watched – any movie that has a commentary with his, I've listened to it just because of the personality to these movies. And this one does not disappoint.
No.
No.
So off-topic question for 1 minute.
Oh, yeah.
What's the very best commentary you've ever listened to?
Oh, my goodness. All right. The very best commentary I've ever listened to. Are we talking about enjoy? Like, did I enjoy it? Is funniest? Because it's got to be.
It could be for whatever reason, but what would be the one that you've enjoyed the most?
The one that it's got to be Bruce Campbell and Bubba Hotep, where he's Elvis watching Bruce Campbell play Elvis.
Okay.
And then there's a Spinal Tap one that's really funny. Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr. does that character. This is very random, but the remake of The Crazies has a very good commentary from the director that breaks down the production, and he tells wonderful stories. Paul Anderson is very good on all of his Resident Evil. I enjoy. Let's see. Taika Waititi absolutely insults people when he does his commentary, so they're not worth listening to. Kevin Smith always does very good commentaries. Tusk was a very good commentary by him.
Yeah, that was a love project for him.
I like that. He tries on that. I know this sounds bad, and I'm not being insulting, because he made some very good movies. But on this movie. I think a lot of people just make fun of it, but he tried. He'll make a joke of it, but the cinematography, the set design, the costuming, and the performance from Michael Parks. Kevin Smith, he's jokey about it, but he wanted to make a good movie. And I think, for the most part, he succeeded.
I think so. And what I think he did the best, though, was that first trailer.
Oh, yeah.
The first trailer, I was like, Kevin did it.
Yeah, he made it.
But... my favorite commentary track of all time.
Yeah, what's yours?
Is Gary Busey for the Buddy Holly story.
What?
So it's Gary Busey, like when he was in his crazy, crazy years, like 2006, 2007. And so it's the director of the Buddy Holly story and Gary Busey watching it again. And Gary Busey just sings along with it. It's like a sing along track.
Oh my gosh.
And the director keeps saying, well, in this shot, he goes, yeah, hold on. Pegasus. And he's just like singing the whole time.
I need to listen to this.
It's like frustrating to listen to, but at the same time, it's glorious.
Oh, there's another one I just want to tell you that has a good commentary. I don't know. I'll get to it later. But
okay.
Yeah. Oh, Green Room. Green Room has a very good commentary.
Okay.
Jeremy Saulnier.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about snowmobiles here soon, but I just want to bring up a couple more things before we talk about this film, finish this film. So the bazookas.
Which I think were like Nerf gun launchers painted black.
They are very expensive, though. And they're kind of, they might be alien.
They definitely are Ridley Scott inspired. I honestly think it's a Nerf gun with the top part of an old overhead projector glued onto the top of it.
Yeah, I think so. And they're easy. They're so lightweight and easy to use that Stacy Keach can blow up Bruce Campbell from a fair distance away.
Right.
This isn't in the Army now where you can shoot it backwards.
or in Commando where you can shoot them backwards.
Same gag. I should do the best ill-shot grenade rounds.
That's amazing.
All right, but yeah, I mean, so these bazookas, they blow up the FBI guy. Like, there's real helicopters in this movie, too. And they wreck cars. So they do wreck. They have helicopter shots.
But I'll say this about the wreck cars. When I was 9 years old, my dad took me to Thunder Bay to go watch the monster truck rally. And we always had older cars. And my dad was a money saver. And he was a mechanic, so he could always keep old cars going along. And he drove to the gate to go park. And then the guy said, no, the cars to be crushed are over at the other gate. So they just assumed when they saw a car that... But you could, if you wanted your car to be part of the show, bring it and donate it to be crushed by the monster truck. So you could say, okay, like, I was going to get rid of that car anyways, and it got to be part of the show. I think that's kind of the same thing here. If you want your car to be on screen, we'll wreck it for you, is how I think they got cars for these car wrecks.
Got it. Oh, absolutely. They towed those cars there.
Oh, for sure.
At least they set up a scene where they hit cars.
No, exactly. Like, there was some production value there.
They put a rocket launcher in Stacy Keach's hands. They blew up Stacy Keach.
In my notes, how in the hell did Stacy Keach get to be the hero of this movie?
And he just takes the gun from the guy, and then the two run away.
Yeah, but like, in this movie, all Stacy Keach does is say, "No, that boy you like is no good.
Ski bum Matt.
We don't marry people like us. Don't marry people like that.
Yeah. Give me another gimlet."
He's only a bad guy. And then he disarms two guys by talking them down and stealing a gun to a cheering round of applause.
The director's family.
They almost leave with him on their shoulders when they exit the restaurant. And the next thing in this moment between a standoff between our villain and our hero, it's like having Lex Luthor and Superman have a stare down and then Perry White kill Lex Luthor.
Yep. Sean Astin does not do anything heroic in this movie.
So here's my, you know the theory about Indiana Jones, where if he wasn't in the movie, the same thing would have happened.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happening here. If Sean Astin wasn't in this movie, the same thing would have happened.
Because that woman never would have heard the conversation with Ski Bum Matt, and then he never would have put her on the thing with the bomb. Right?
Exactly.
That bomb wouldn't have done much, because then Ski Bum Matt would have been around. And then there's that park ranger out there who actually succeeds in a snowmobile chase.
Yeah, he's the real hero. Him and Cliff.
Yep. Cliff, yeah. And they defeated Josh.
I think the wrong guy's on the cover of this movie.
We got to talk about snowmobiles real quick. But just please tell me your thoughts about Sean Astin being slammed again.
So I generally feel bad for him because that's not the job he signed up for at the end of the day, right? Like, I've done jobs when I was in high school or whatever, and someone's like, oh, come mow my lawn. And then you go mow their lawn. And like, oh, what I meant by mow my lawn was we're going to bale hay all day. And you're like, okay, this wasn't what I was told the job was. If you want me to come bale hay, tell me that. But don't say I'm going to come to cut your lawn. And I feel like that's the same thing. We're going to put you in a movie, you're going to act, and all of a sudden you're a stuntman. And I don't think he signed up for that.
Yeah. I think we nailed up this movie pretty good. Do you want to get into my favorite snowmobile scenes right now?
I want nothing more to get into your favorite snowmobile scenes.
All right, so I, you know me, man. I do my data. And so I originally wrote a post about jet skis. Everyone loved it. And for 4 years, people are like, write a snowmobile scene. And right. I wasn't too sure about it because I felt like it was too close to jet skis. But just so many people kept asking me. I'm like, I'm kind of a jerk if I don't do it. So
you know why snowmobiles are better than jet skis, right?
Well, there's actual danger. If you wipe out on a jet ski, you're going to flop on the water. So I rode on snowmobiles. My uncle took me out on the farm in Iowa. And I don't know why, but instead of grabbing around on his waist, I grabbed around the bars on the back. And he took off just like a a rocket. And my hand...
It's 100% torque.
I almost fell off. I was frightened for my life. We were in ditches because there wasn't snow everywhere. You know, manholes, holes could have been anywhere. We're going about 40, 50. I don't even know if I had a helmet on. Terrifying. So when when I've been on jet skis, I just want to take a nap. I think I would get into an accident because I fall asleep and get bored. I would probably injure myself getting off of a jet ski onto the pier.
Right. But jet skis go on water and snowmobiles go on snow and they can go on water. Did you know this?
No. They can actually go? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's guys who do it as like a challenge. If you get going fast enough, a snowmobile will go across water. And so they'll take half frozen lakes and they'll have races across them.
Maniacs.
And if you don't pin it all the way, your snowmobile will sink to the bottom of the lake.
Sounds terrifying.
It is. There's a bunch on YouTube. You should check it out.
All right. But there's danger there.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. I mean, you can blow up and you could wipe out. And I picked my favorites. All right. So I found 19 movies and I'm going to read them out to you real quick. Die Hard 2, Snow Day, True Lies, A View to a Kill, Living Daylights, Triple X, The World is Not Enough, Babylon AD, Inception, The Fate of the Furious, Jackie Chan's First Strike, Die Another Day, Agent Cody Banks, Johnny English Reborn, The Santa Claus 2, Fred Claus, Wrong Turn 4, Bloody Beginnings, Raven, Lederhosen Zombies, Deadfall, 22 July. Plus this movie as well. And then there's one with Goldberg where he plays Santa. But the only movie.
Santa Slay.
Yeah, Santa Slay. But the only ones I could
my
really.
My buddy was in that movie.
That's awesome. When I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh. But I could only use movies with Rotten Tomato scores or Tomato Meter scores and box office to compare it to the jet ski. I love the Die Hard 2 snowmobile chase, but it's not my favorite because it's too much like a snowmobile chase.
Yeah, like, it's kind of on the nose.
I mean, except for the jump at the end, but then the snowmobile blows up. I mean, they're basically just going on a flat surface and shooting at each other. It's too believable. It's of all the grounded things in Die Hard 2, that's one of them. The only one of them that Rennie Harlan did.
I do want to say I think you missed one.
Which one?
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin has a snowmobile chase?
Well, it's got Batgirl rides a Batgirl snowmobile.
Holy
when they're
crap.
Going to get Mr. Freeze at the end.
Holy crap. All right, well, I got to change my data. That's amazing. That is amazing. No, I'm not angry. I'm going to look this up as soon as we get off. So
I only know that because I remember I got the toy for Christmas that year.
No, wait. Does she engage in action on it or does she just ride it?
She rides it next to Batman and Robin as they're coming to get, and then I think they jump off of it onto the big cliff.
Oh, because like Wind River has snowmobiles, but he just cruises around on it.
Yeah, it's not an actual chase.
Yeah, because I looked up, I really tried to research everything. I just saw like a, I like, you know, people are like, where's Wind River? I'm like, no, it's just like a nice, he just rides around on it. So I want to tell you my top two. Because Santa Claus 2, they just use it to wrap somebody up. Johnny English Reborn, he uses it to jump on a gondola. Fred Claus, they just ride at each other. Wrong Turn Floor, if some women's are on it, they get decapitated. Which, you know, whatever. But so my favorites.
Which whatever.
Yeah, my favorites, though, are in The World Is Not Enough. With those parachuting. They're kind of hybrids. They're like hybrid snowmobiles that are flying, but then they land, and then it's like a snowmobile chase. I mean, during this thing, like, they're kind of unwieldy, right? But there's this awesome part where Pierce Brosnan thinks he like, ditches one of them. The thing flies off the cliff. And in every other Bond movie, you think that this thing's going to blow up. But a parachute goes off, and then the thing keeps going. And then later on, there's a huge explosion from one of the jet skis because he flies two of them into each other. And then he's really cool about it, but then an avalanche falls, and he gets sucked down into, like, a pit. So this movie, you know, one of them hits a tree and explodes. I feel like it just showed, you know, a hyper reality of snowmobiles, but it also showcased the danger. It also had some good gags. Like Pierce Brosnan's like, see you back at the lodge. and then the thing uses its parachute to fly away. So there's funny bits, there's misdirection, and I just love the how dangerous it is, right? I just think it's a good, like, he acts all cool, but then he gets sucked up in an avalanche. Like, it's pretty kind of, you know, it's a well-made scene.
It's a good James Bond scene.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you look at movies like Die Another Day, a snowmobile just hits the back of an invisible car. And then you have The Living Daylights, where there's like a cello outrunning them. And then there's another A View to a Kill, where the snowmobile is so slow that Roger Moore just jumps off of it. Like that, you can't. Like that,
I think in A View to a Kill, they're actually using something called a snow bug.
Yeah, I mean,
which has a single front ski as opposed to two skis.
It's incredibly slow and very unwieldy, and it doesn't represent snowmobiles too well. So I was like, you know what? This doesn't do it. True Lies and Inception, it's just more about them like looking cool while shooting snowmobilers. So I didn't add that. Also with The Fate of the Furious. So there's a scene in The Fate of the Furious where Tyrese knocks a guy off a snowmobile, then kills three guys on snowmobiles coming towards him. They don't showcase snowmobiles at all in that movie too well. Babylon ID with Vin Diesel, another one with him, has a fancy jump. But the second one, this sounds crazy, is Snow Day. Because
there's
two snowmobiles chasing this kid. And one of them, for some reason, hits a ramp that's in front of a snowman and almost kills a guy and then destroys the massive snowman. But they built a ramp. So for us to believe this, the guy making the snowman built a ramp first.
Right.
And then turned around and built the snowman. I don't know. Maybe he wanted to hit it with a snowmobile and they wrecked it for him.
Could be.
I mean, that's the best logic. And then the next one, these two kids are falling. One kid gets knocked off. He gets clotheslined by a tree branch. That could happen on a snowmobile. And then the other kid drives into a soccer net and wipes out. So it's a really nice, you know, PG-rated chase, but it showcases everything that can go wrong on snowmobiles.
And there's no snowmobile explosions.
Yeah. I mean,
so snowmobile explosions take me right out of the experience because I've been, like, my whole life I've had snowmobiles and been driving snowmobiles. We actually as kids had something called the Kitty Cat, which is made by Articat. Mine was a 1977 Kitty Cat, and actually my son drives it now, but it's like a small 20cc version of a snowmobile. And so my dad used to tie it with a 3-foot rope to the front of his snowmobile. And then we would go driving on trails and I'd be in front of him, kind of like on a leash going around, or he'd put a peg in the middle of a second lot. And we would just drive in circles all day tied to a rope on this thing. But I had a 1984 Polaris Star when I was, I think 12, I was driving it and we were going in deep snow and we were actually out moose hunting. That's my life. And there was a frozen log under the snow I did not see.
Oh!
And I hit that thing going full speed, and nothing exploded. There was just an abrupt stop, and just like boom, and I caved the whole undercarriage of the snowmobile in the front, like under the engine. And it was only like a month old. My dad had just bought it.
Oh no!
And it was a nice light machine for his kids to drive, and he was pretty angry when that happened. But again, you don't know it's under the snow, right?
Yeah.
And so we just pulled it out and we took a hammer and an axe and we just kind of boop, 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 put it back out to where it was. But in a movie, that would have just exploded and I would have been gone. But that's not the way snowmobiles are designed to take front impact and not explode.
So many snowmobiles explode in movies. I love it.
Right.
All right. And then, you know what the best monologuing or talking to yourself on a snowmobile is? Dreamcatcher.
Yeah.
Damian Lewis is talking to himself. That's pretty good.
That's the Stephen King movie, right?
Yeah, with the big eyebrows on Morgan Freeman and the butt monsters.
I think they're called shit weevils.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bananas movie that was.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was set in the same town as It, right?
Yeah, and this movie.
Okay. For sure.
I mean, but that movie had a cast, though, dude. Thomas Jane, Timothy Oliphant, Damian Lewis, Jason Lee, Morgan Freeman, Tom Sizemore.
I am a huge Oliphant fan.
Huge. The craziest.
All I want in my life is more Oliphant.
Yeah, I got more Oliphant. Oh, I got a fever.
Justified?
Great.
Brilliant.
It's like, I like Walty Goggins too, man. Yep. I wrote a top 10 villains list, and then he's 8, 9, and 10 for 2018.
Well, Scoggins is brilliant.
Dude, him and Oliphant were the best. Justified was a perfect show.
So when I describe Justified to people, I say there's lawmen and there's outlaws and there's good guys and there's bad guys, and they're not exclusive to either group.
I like it. I mean, it's cheap too. You can like watch it on Amazon right now for free. Oh, well, unless you're paying for Prime.
So I hadn't watched it when it was on.
Ooh.
And my mom did. And she's like, oh, you should watch Justified. And I was like, oh, okay. And I wasn't super. And then she was like, you don't understand. And I was like, okay, Mom, I'll watch it. And she goes, no, hold on. She got in her car and drove to Walmart and bought me the entire series.
Oh, my gosh.
Came home and she's like, here, take this home and watch it. And so I watched it and I was like, yeah, Mom, it was that good. Like, I feel like I need to pay that forward to somebody at some point in time.
I want to high five your mom. That's awesome.
Mom's pretty sweet.
I want to buy her a mountain burger. Right? That's a good thing, right?
It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
So what'd you think about my two top twos, man? What'd you think about World Is Not Enough and Snow Day?
I think they're the perfect picks. I was nervous you were going to pick Die Hard 2, and being a snowmobiler, that one, it may be uncomfortable because it was very much like actually driving a snowmobile. And that's... That's the thing. So in this movie, when you see her shooting a gun, you need two hands at all times to drive a snowmobile at any reasonable speed.
Mm-hmm.
With the way that it reacts with the snow. So it's not a great vehicle to be doing a chase. It's you're very exposed. You're very cold. You got to put your whole body into maneuvering it. And in Die Hard, it was very much like it was viscerally uncomfortable to watch those scenes. But Snow Day and The World's Not Enough, they are fun scenes to watch. So I'm with you 100%. They're great scenes.
Because World's Not Enough, it's out there enough. Like, these are flying around. So they're hybrids. So you could technically...
And that's what James Bond needs to be. Yeah.
And you could technically shoot a gun because it's like a hybrid snowmobile. And the other one, they don't shoot guns, but they show the real-life problems that could happen.
Right. Hey, did you mention in your list G.I. Joe?
What, the second one?
No, it's the first one where they go into the Arctic. And well, Snake Eyes is on his snowmobile.
Yeah, but there's no chase. There's no action scene there, is there?
I don't. Maybe you're right.
Because I got a lot of these inquiries, and I was like, no.
I might watch G.I. Joe tonight just to find out.
And if they do, let me know, man.
I will.
I mean, that's why I also like putting these posts up on various sites, because then people are like, Mark, oh wait, G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, Jet Ski. I pulled it up right here. All right, well, I'm going to watch this when we're off and then make some adjustments to my post. All right, well, listen, man, it's always a blast to have you on. And so we talked about this great movie. We talked about snowmobiles. Is there anything else you want to cover before we get out of here?
I just want to say, anybody who's listening thinking that we are harping on Sean Astin or harping on this movie, we are not. I encourage anybody who's listening, watch this movie. If you have to watch the Riff Tracks version of it, do that. But it's not a long movie, and you will definitely have a good time watching it.
It's earnest. Like, it's not like Ernest P. Worrell. It's earnest. And it's,
although one guy's trying very hard to be Ernest P. Worrell.
Exactly. It's just earnest in its attempt to have fun.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, I do think our theories might be true. We have nothing about it. So allegedly we should have said for all of this. But I still love it, man. And I think poor Sean Astin looking terrified is one of the highlights of my year.
Do you think, Mark, not to pat ourselves on the back, but do you think this is the most comprehensive look at this film on the internet right now?
100%. 150%.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're on the same page there.
I'm more certain that this is the most comprehensive than the fact that I covered every snowmobile action film. All right. Well, hey, man. So what are we doing next? What's our next one? Oh, we're doing Venom next.
We're doing Venom next.
Then
Peter Rabbit.
Peter Rabbit. Set in stone, right? Want to do those two? Because we still have Faster, but I think...
I really think that our list is like our podcast. They're a real stream of consciousness.
Let's do it. So let's not stick to anything, because then it'll become rigid.
Exactly.
Awesome. So we'll do Venom and then Peter Rabbit, which is the most amazing thing ever.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right, man. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Adam Hodgins, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.